Hi, this is Diagnosis Explained, a podcast about physical and mental health disorders, how they're treated, and examples of people who have them. This podcast is for people who have been diagnosed with mental or physical health disorders, know someone with a diagnosis, are interested in medicine, want to learn how to explain diagnoses to their patients, or just love hearing me talk. I'm a physician assistant and a patient. I've been diagnosed with bipolar, anxiety, and depression. I've realized medical providers have so little time to explain to patients about their diagnosis. This can lead to information overload for the patients and still leave them with questions. I decided to begin this podcast by talking about mental health because I think it's the thing that needs the most explaining. Even now, in 2019, there's a stigma, a lack of understanding, and a silence surrounding these legitimate diagnoses. Today, we're going to be talking about anxiety, how it's diagnosed and treated. This podcast is going to be broken up into two pieces. This episode is going to talk about anxiety disorders in general, separation anxiety disorder, selective mutism, or they don't speak selectively, and specific phobias, including social phobia or social anxiety disorder. Next time, we'll talk about panic disorder, agoraphobia, generalized anxiety disorder, substance-induced anxiety disorder, and how all anxiety disorders are treated. I'd recommend listening to both these episodes because anxiety disorders are so intertwined that many people have more than one diagnosis within this category. I'd also recommend listening to depression treatment because it covers many of the same medications I'm going to mention here. So we've had a few people write in and ask what the difference between ADHD and ADD is. We'll be discussing ADHD in depth more later, but I thought it was a good question, so I'm going to answer it now. So the short answer is, technically, there is no ADD, only attention deficit slash hyperactivity disorder, or ADHD. Since the DSM-4, so the version before this one, ADHD has been the true diagnosis when it comes to ADD and ADHD. The combination of these disorders helps us recognize that the presentation of ADHD is fluid. This means that it can change, especially over someone's lifetime. Sometimes they'll be more hyperactive and sometimes more inattentive. That's why it's been combined together instead of having two separate diagnoses of ADD and ADHD. Have a certain diagnosis you'd like me to discuss, medications you're taking and don't understand, or a question, please send it in at diagnosisexplainedpodcast@gmail.com. I do my best to make sure that these podcasts are as accurate as possible, and I've spent a lot of time doing research. If you've enjoyed it, please subscribe and leave a review. You can also head to our Patreon and buy me a soy chai latte or a banana if you'd like. You can also donate some money to get access to my notes. Why are we talking about anxiety? Anxiety disorders are the most common mental illness in the United States. From the Anxiety and Depression Association of America, 18.1% of adults in the United States suffer from anxiety disorders, but only 36.9% of the sufferers receive treatment. And this is despite anxiety disorders being a highly treatable condition. People with anxiety disorders are 3 to 5 times more likely to go to the doctor and 6 times more likely to be hospitalized from psychiatric disorders. Females are more affected with anxiety disorders than males at a 2-to-1 ratio, and nearly half of those diagnosed with depression also have been diagnosed with an anxiety disorder. There are some pretty famous people who have anxiety disorders as well. Emma Stone had panic attacks as a child. She says, "The first time I had a panic attack, I was sitting at a friend's house, and I thought the house was burning down. I called my mom, and she brought me home. For the next 3 years, it would not stop." Ellie Goulding says, "It was the weirdest time of my life. Sick, horrible things would go through my mind, but I didn't want to draw attention to myself. It got to the point when I couldn't even get to the car and go to the studio." Mara Wilson says, "I wish someone had told me that it was okay to be anxious, that you don't have to fight it, that in fact fighting it makes it worse, that pushing it away, really what it is, it's the fear of fear." Marcus Morris, a basketball player, says that he used sleeping pills and marijuana, but didn't have much relief until he saw a therapist and started taking daily medication. Others include Harrison Ford, Paula Dean, Jennifer Lawrence, and Scarlett Johansson. What is anxiety? Anxiety disorders develop from a complex set of risk factors, including genetics, brain chemistry, personality, and life events. In the DSM-5, there are 8 different anxiety disorders. And this does not include OCD, which is in its own category in the DSM-5, though previously it was categorized as one of the anxiety disorders. We're going to talk about OCD and related disorders in a different episode. So don't worry, we will cover it, just not in this one. Disorders develop in childhood and continue into adulthood if not treated. And anxiety disorders have excessive fear and anxiety. Anxiety is not the same thing as fear. So fear is the response to a current threat. So panic attacks are a type of fear response. It's your fight or flight system saying, hey, we need to either run away from this saber-toothed tiger or we need to fight it. And that's fear. Anxiety is anticipation of a future threat, saying that, oh, the saber-toothed tiger hangs out by the lake. We shouldn't go there. And usually, anxiety leads us to avoiding situations. In the case of the saber-toothed tiger, it's a good idea. But nowadays, we tend to have anxiety and fear about things that aren't actually dangerous. Social situations. Fear of being left alone. Fear of open places or not being able to escape. We have anxiety about our jobs, our social lives. But our body treats these experiences the same as the one with a saber-toothed tiger. We have anxiety and a fear response. So as we're going through the list of all the different anxiety disorders, just keep in mind that it needs to be persistent. This means not just once. Generally, and this is kind of a flexible time period, but generally you need to be suffering with it for about 6 months before it's considered persistent. It also needs to disrupt your daily life. Also needs to be excessive, out of proportion to the situation. It can't be realistic. If you're facing a saber-toothed tiger and you have anxiety and fear about this situation, that's normal. But when it's about responding to texts or answering the phone, then that's where it becomes abnormal and excessive and out of proportion to the situation. And also, an anxiety disorder cannot be from a medical condition or medications. So please, if you feel like you have one of these things, one of these anxiety disorders, please go to your primary care doctor first. We need to make sure it's not something like your thyroid or your adrenal glands that are messing up. We want to make sure that if we're treating an anxiety disorder, that it truly is an anxiety disorder and not something else. Okay, so now we're going to talk about the different types of anxiety disorders. And just so you know, this is going to be organized by typical age of onset, with the one that I'm going to talk about next usually happening when a person is a child. Okay, so we're going to start with separation anxiety disorder. So here's some statistics about it. In adults, about 1-2% of adults have separation anxiety disorder. Adolescents, usually 1.6% or so. In children, 4%. And it's more common in females than in males. So what is separation anxiety disorder? So it's being fearful or anxious about separation from attachment figures to a degree that is inappropriate. So most children don't want to be taken away from their parents. But in children with separation anxiety disorder, they have an excessive, inappropriate amount of fear and anxiety surrounding these situations. There's persistent fear or anxiety about harm coming to these attachment figures and events that could lead to loss or separation from the attachment figures. They fear car accidents that are going to kill their parents or going to the grocery store and getting separated from them. They're also reluctant to go away from attachment figures, as well as they have nightmares and physical forms of distress. So this is usually a problem in childhood, but can continue into adulthood. So how do we treat it? The biggest thing that we need to do is engage in psychotherapy. We need to find a therapist, either a psychologist, a therapist, preferably someone who works with children or specialists in separation anxiety disorder for adults. In psychotherapy, you'll do things like exposure therapy, which is a type of CBT or cognitive behavioral therapy. If you want to learn more about that, we'll probably talk about it in a separate podcast, or you can just head back to my depression episodes, and I talk about CBT there. In therapy, you'll also work on relaxation training. So this is teaching coping mechanisms so that the child can deal with the anxiety and fear that they have. Another big part is teaching parents, because sometimes comforting anxious children can reinforce their anxiety instead of helping them overcome it. So reinforcing brave behavior is actually better than getting mad at them or trying to comfort them. If it's bad enough, we can turn to medications such as SSRIs, or our selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. They're antidepressants that also work for anxiety, or benzodiazepines. And these are things like Xanax, Ativan, or Valium. But the problem with these is that they're only meant to be used in a short term, because they're actually quite habit-forming. Next, we have selective mutism. So let's think about what this is. Selective mutism. So mutism is when they're mute, they can't speak. So they're selectively not speaking in certain situations. So here's some statistics. In children, it's 0.03% to maybe 1% of them who have this. So it usually happens before 5 years old, but it may not be obvious until school has started. It's much more common in young children than it is in adolescents or adults. So what is it? So it's a failure to speak in social situations in which there's an expectation to speak, like school, or with non-immediate family members. So sometimes they won't talk to their grandparents or cousins. And this is in spite of the fact that they speak in other situations. This child isn't always mute. It's only in certain situations where they just can't talk. So how do we treat this? The best way, again, is to go to your mental health professionals. And through individual and group therapy, you'll work on learning how to speak in certain situations. And early intervention is super important. If they haven't spoken in class by the mid-year of kindergarten, at the very latest, then you need to seek help. The sooner that you can treat this, the better. So there are a couple different techniques that can be used. For example, using things like scripting can help reduce anxiety. So you practice having conversations. So when you say, when the teacher calls on you in school and you don't know what to say, what's something that you can say? And you practice these scripts. Practicing responses such as yes, no, or maybe, or I don't know, are actually very helpful in this situation. It's also very important to avoid punishing or forcing the child to speak, as this can just reinforce their anxiety. And just like in separation anxiety, we want to reward appropriate behaviors rather than punish the ones that we don't like. You can also use medications for this, but early intervention with the help of mental health professionals is the number one way to treat this problem. Now we're going to move on to specific phobias, or fear of specific things. Here's some statistics. So the prevalence of this is 7 to 9%, with females being affected more than males. So this means 7 to 9 out of 100 people have specific phobias. The average age for these to start is 10 years old. And a person with specific phobias tends to fear three or more objects or situations. Approximately 75% of individuals with specific phobias fear more than one situation or object. It's easy to think of being afraid of snakes, but people who have specific phobias, where their fear is so extreme, so much that it impacts their daily life, they tend to have that fear about more than one situation, which is exhausting, I'm sure. So to be diagnosed with a specific fear or phobia, these people are fearful or anxious about certain situations or objects, and they tend to avoid those situations or objects. The fear is persistent and out of proportion to the actual risk. So I'm not talking about being afraid of spiders, I'm talking about being afraid of pictures of spiders or talking about spiders. Or being so afraid of spiders that you won't go into the basement. Some examples of phobias are of animals. There's arachnophobia, or fear of spiders. There's ophidiophobia, which is fear of snakes. There's phobias about the natural environment, such as acrophobia, or fear of heights. There's fear of storms and of water. There are also blood injection injury fears, such as being afraid of needles or medical procedures, or misophobia, fear of germs. And just so you know, this misophobia is not the same as OCD. OCD can have obsessions with germs, but we're talking about phobias here. Someone who has a phobia of germs is not going to have all of the same symptoms as someone with OCD. There's fear about certain situations, such as being on airplanes, being in elevators, or being in enclosed places. And then there are a category of other fears, such as vomiting or fear of clowns. I'm gonna let you guess what the best treatment for this is. Okay, you're right. It's psychotherapy. Specifically, exposure therapy, which is a type of CBT. This will slowly desensitize the person to the event or thing. And remember, the fear response that they're having is really physical, and it's real. And so telling someone to just stop being afraid, that's not going to work. We have to slowly teach them that the fear that they're feeling is not actual danger, but just fear. You can also use things like medications, specifically beta blockers, like propranolol or benzodiazepines. But remember, those ones are the ones that are habit forming, so I really would rather not use them, especially in children. Next, we have social anxiety disorder, or a social phobia. 7% of the people in the United States have this. The onset is usually 13 years old. So these people are fearful or anxious about social interactions and situations, and they tend to avoid those social interactions and situations. The fear and anxiety in people who have social anxiety disorder tends to be about being judged negatively, being embarrassed, humiliated, rejected, or offending others. Some examples are meeting new people, eating and drinking in front of others, performing in front of others. And a lot of us have anxiety surrounding these things. But remember, we're talking about social anxiety disorder, so the fear is completely out of proportion to these situations, and it makes them want to avoid these situations. It's become a problem in their lives. So the best way to treat this is through psychotherapy. And this can help you change the negative thoughts. Maybe you're saying you're stupid and an idiot and you're gonna mess up. Therapy will help you realize that just because you're thinking that, most other people aren't. And if they are, then they shouldn't be worth your worry anyway. You can also learn coping skills, how to manage that stress and anxiety that you feel. It can help you get prepared for situations where maybe someone is offended. Well, what do you do if they are offended? Medications can also be helpful in these situations. SSRIs or other antidepressants can help lower your overall anxiety. Beta blockers can help slow your heart rate down so you don't get the pounding heart and sweaty hands that you might get when you get into these situations. And then also there's the benzodiazepines. But remember, these are habit-forming, and I really don't like using. So that's where we're going to wrap up today. We've talked about separation anxiety disorder, selective mutism, specific phobias, and social anxiety disorder, or social phobia. With these anxiety disorders, I really, really, really want you to remember that the fear response, the physical response, is real. People with these disorders are not just weak or overreacting. They're having real responses, even though the situation may not cause that same response in other people. Psychotherapy is the best way to deal with these situations, but things like SSRIs or other antidepressants can be helpful. Propranolol can help get rid of some of the physical symptoms. And benzos can help get rid of the anxiety, but they are addictive and habit-forming, which makes them easy to abuse. So I would strongly recommend that people try other medications first, not the benzodiazepine. Next episode, we'll cover panic disorder and discuss what a panic attack really is. We'll talk about agoraphobia, and despite its name, it's actually a very relatable disease. There's also generalized anxiety disorder and substance medication-induced anxiety disorder. We'll also talk about treatment and how people self-medicate, can use self-care, and use medications and psychotherapy to help them in these situations. Even though these disorders are very difficult to handle on your own, they are very treatable. So please seek help early for yourself or for those you love. If you feel like I haven't covered something well or have any questions, please email me at diagnosisexplainedpodcast@gmail.com. I really want to help people and one day hope to do a Q&A, so please send in your questions. Remember, they'll be completely confidential, and I really do love answering them. Thanks for joining me today, and don't forget to tune into next episode and maybe even re-listen to the depression treatment episode, because a lot of the medications are covered there, and I didn't really cover them here. Thank you, and see ya! Bye!